How has the poetry
How has the
community
poetry
there evolved since
since
that time?
Oh gosh, it's I think gotten far more vibrant. As you mentioned in the introduction, I divide my time between Kelowna and Prince George now, but I still spend a lot of time in Terrace. Two young women who really I've grown up with, or no, they grew up with me and their family. I go back to Terrace. I spend time in Prince Rupert. All of my research circles around the north, and in the last 20 years or so, here even in Kelowna, I was at a really great reading the other day at Sharon Thiessen's house. Matt Rader was reading sort of at a poetry salon that Sharon hosted, and I was talking to some folks from the Okanagan Valley writers community, and they were saying, oh, Prince George, there's just this incredibly vibrant community up there. And I think that's true. I think that as much as in the early 90s and late 80s, I was just looking for people in those geographies, people who were writers. I don't think you have to go very far at all in northern BC now to find people who are writers. And I think that is an incredible, it provides an incredible possibility for people who may fancy themselves as writers or wanting to take up a writerly way of being, just to know that there are others of us out there who are in these geographies. And I don't want to say more importantly, but certainly equally importantly, that we're writing about these geographies, that we're trying to pull poetics and stories and narratives out of the lands that I think too often have been dealt with in a somewhat disingenuous way. And by that I mean they've been written about by people who don't have those lands bred into their bones. They've been written about in potentially an overly romanticized way, a potentially trite fashion, because they're not written about by people who live in these places, who've gone to high school, junior high, elementary school, who've had children there, who've struggled with the kind of blood and messy everyday vernacular, as well as supernatural environmental realities of these geographies. So, yeah, the communities in northern BC, I mean, gosh, Smithers now has Creekstone Press with Sheila Peters, who's just a fabulous, incredible writer, and her partner, Lynn. They, like I said, run Creekstone Press. So, there's actually independent presses now in northern British Columbia that I think are, again, opening space for people who are not only writing about these geographies, but are also living them and are providing an incredible example. People maybe like me, who grew up on the Charlottes, who grew up on Haida Gwaii, but I mean, Susan Musgrave was around when I was growing up on the Charlottes, but she was like this mythic entity who sort of floated into places like Port Clements. I recently had the total pleasure of doing a CBC adjudicated poetry award with Susan Musgrave, and it was really neat, to hear this woman who, as a child, I kind of knew was a writer floating out there in northern geographies. But it's nice to commit my life to it in so many ways.
You're talking about the Spirit Bear territory.
I'm talking about the.
Spirit Bear territory.
That's right,
Yeah.
yeah. Again, fascinating renaming, isn't it? The Spirit Bear Rainforest. Yeah. I really genuinely am fascinated by nomenclature and the way that names and naming of physical geographies in so many ways both shift our political orientations to them and are shifted by the kind of geopolitical realities of the moment. So I think, in the late 80s, Lyell Island was being blockaded for the first time by Haida folks. And I remember the tensions between Mac and Blow and Haida elders, over the desire of the Haida Nation to stop clear cutting of some of the last coastal old growth on the globe. And I think that conversation, what with the Carmana and the Walbran, all through the 90s, it really engendered a reframing of the environmental conversation and environmental consciousness about northern British Columbia, and ultimately resulted in the Spirit Bearer Rainforest movement and nomenclature around that, to really gesture toward not only the long-standing Indigenous claims to that territory, but also the environmental rarity and worth of that area. Now, with all of that laudatory language put out there, I'll say also that because I think nomenclature and naming is a slippery practice, I think we can't simply rest on our laurels because something has a nice name. I think that it doesn't necessarily indicate a deep, sort of grounded, steep permanence of the possibility of these geographies to be maintained and to be realized. I think that they are under constant siege and threat by resource extraction, by globalized sort of commodity capitalism that insists on transforming nature into something for human consumption. I find that terrifying, and I sure don't think that it's going to stop through naming practices.
The notion of neoliberalism and how everything is treated like a commodity has been given a lot more attention in this presidential election that's going on, as I'm sure you're aware. And neoliberalism is very much at the root of treating everything like a commodity, like a product, which is unfortunate.